जया गिरिवराधारे जया गिरिवराधारे जया व्रज जन रंजना जया व्रज जन रंजना यशोदानंदना जय व्रज जन रंजना जय व्रज जन रंजना चार जया कुंज बिहारे जमुना तीरा बना चार जया कुंज बिहारे जया राधा माधवा जया कुंज बिहारे राधा माधवा जया कुंज बिहारे जया कुंज बिहारे
जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राज आचार्य स्तोत्र शत शिष्य माधे डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी शिल प्रभुपाद की जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राज आचार्य स्तोत्र शत शिष्य माधे डिवाइन ग्रेस भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती गोस्वामी महाराज शिल प्रभुपाद की अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की इस्कॉन फाउंडर आचार्य शिल प्रभुपाद की ग्रंथराशिमं भागवतं की निताई गौर प्रेमनंदी ओ ग्लोरिस टू द असेंबल डेवोटीज ओ ग्लोरिस टू द असेंबल डेवोटीज ओ ग्लोरिस टू द असेंबल डेवोटीज ओ ग्लोरिस टू शिशिगुरु वंशिगुरंगा ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय We're reading from Shrimad Bhagavatam Canto 9 entitled Liberation Chapter 20 entitled The Dynasty of Puru Text Number 22 रेतो दा पुत्र ना जाति नरा देवा जमा सयत त्वं चास्या धात गर्भास्या सत्यम आह शकुंतला ऋतोधा पुत्र न जाति नर देवा यमाशयत् त्वञ्चास्याधाथ गर्भास्य सत्यम आह शकुंतला ऋतोधा पुत्र न जाति नर देवा यमंशयत् त्वञ्चास्याधाथ गर्भास्य सत्यम आह शकुंतला क्रिश्चन Retadha, a person who discharges semen. Semen. Putraha, the son. Nayati, saves. Naradeva, O king, Maharaj Dushmanta. Yamasajat, from punishment by Yamaraj. Or from the custody of Yamaraj. Tvam, your good self, cha, an, asya, of this child, dhata, the creator, garbhasya, of the embryo, satyam, truthfully, aha, said, Shakuntala, your wife Shakuntala. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. O King Dushmanta, he who discharges semen is the actual father, and his son saved him from the custody of Yamaraj. You are the actual procreator of this child, indeed, Shakuntala. Speaking the truth. Purport. Upon hearing the omen, Maharaj Dushmanta accepted his wife and child according to Vedic Smriti. Punnam no narakat yasmat pitaram trayate shutaha tashman putra iti proktaha swayam eva swayam bhuva. Because a son delivered his father from punishment in the hell called put, the son is called Putra. According to this principle, when there is a disagreement between the father and mother, it is the father, not the mother, who is delivered by the son. But if the wife is faithful and firmly adherent to her husband, when the father is delivered, the mother is also delivered. Consequently, there is not such a thing as divorce in the Vedic literature. A wife is always trained to be chaste and faithful to her husband. For this help her achieve deliverance from the abominable material condition. This verse clearly says, Putro Nayati Naradeva Yama Shayat. The son saved his father from the custody of Yamaraj. It never says, Putro Nayati Mataram. The son saved his mother. The seed-giving father is delivered, not the storekeeper mother. Consequently, husband and wife should not separate under any condition. For if they have a child whom they raise to be a Vaishnava, he can save both the father and the mother from the custody of Yamaraj and punishment in hellish life. Reto da putro nayati nara deva yamashayat tancha sya datta garva sya satyam aha Shakuntala. O King Dushmanta, he who discharges semen is the actual father, and his son saved him from the custody of Yamaraj. You are the actual procreator of this child, indeed, Shakuntala speaking the truth. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Shrimate Roma Pada Swami Iti Namine. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine. Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashatyade Shatane. Vanchakalpa Tarubhyasya Kripa Sindhu Vyayavacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. So, there was another devotee who was scheduled to give this class, and it was cancelled last minute, so I have to prepare in 10 minutes for this very deep and sensitive, very sensitive issue. In fact, it's like a hot potato type of issue in ISKCON. It's like the 10-pound gorilla. Is that that's how the say goes in the room, or the elephant, you know, in the room. So it's a very deep, difficult issue that in our society we don't necessarily have figured it out yet properly how to deal with this issue. There is something that it was just thinking that in all scriptures the direction of the avoidance of illicit sex in marriage is given. And sex is only for procreation. That is in all the scriptures. But in our Vedic scriptures, and specifically in ISKCON, because we've been taught by Srila Prabhupada this very perfect adherence to the religious principle given by Krishna for human beings. Only in ISKCON we can say it, arguably, that we have this very strict prohibition. In other scriptures, sex is like a given intimacy in sex life for marriage. It's like a God-given privilege. So there is no restrictions for enjoying sex life in other religious tradition. There is not that, at least, you know, in the modern context, like that. So, it creates quite a difficulty in the establishment, at least, of a very strong how would you say? Well, it seems at least that the rate of divorce in our society, in the Eastern society, is arguably sometimes it is said that it's higher than the outside, you know, the secular world, or, you know, out there. And one of the things that remember hearing this from what's the name of the Mataji? Tarak and what? Krishnanandini Mataji and Tarak Prabhu. They were explaining that the devotees who are heading this Grihastha Vision team, right? And they were saying that in their research, you know, and doing this work of creating a support system for marriage devotees, that the greatest challenges that are there in the marriages, in the interviews that they have with devotees, the top most have to do with a lack of emotional and physical intimacy. Lack of emotional sort of fulfillment like that. And intimacy. How to deal with those things. And especially the struggle with sex life. We grown in Kali Yuga, and there is not the support of a Vedic culture. There is no support of a social structure that helps basically educate, because the other issue that is there in difficulties in marriages in our ISKCON society is that there is very little premarital education. We're not quite prepared fully to deal with a Vedic approach to married life. We come with a lot of disadvantages entering into married life, because we already come, most of us, with a different samskaras. Our samskaras are, you know, I mean, at least for some of us who grew up in this is, what is it, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. That's for some of us. And for others, is just sex makes the world go round. It's like the says, you know, said. Sex is it could be used wrongly, but it's also a synonym. That's the same. Synonymous to love. So you express your love through that, you know, intimacy. So we come with already all these samskaras that makes the whole thing very difficult to actually apply it in the Vedic context, in which sense gratification and self-realization, as Prabhupada said, does not go together well. So there is a purpose for things. It's very specific, and it has to be according to religious principles. So to understand how to do it is very difficult, because once, you know, we don't have the structure, the social structure that prepares us for that. In the Vedic culture, you're consistently, from the time of birth, prepared to actually enter into Grihastha life throughout your whole, you know, preparation. So you have this two-track preparation. You're a spiritual education and your material education, both given by the same personalities, you know, the guru. So you go to Guru Kula and the guru prepares you according to your nature and also prepares you spiritually, so you actually can live very comfortable following religious principles. And the goal of life is very clear. And everything has a place. So we hear in the narrations, just like as we've been hearing of King Jayati, of Yadu, of now Dushmanta, how they have no problem with sex life and intimacy. In fact, Jayati was, you know, it was a big thing for him. But never deviated from religious principle, which is something that, you know, sometimes is a little confusing from our perspective. Someone who is so happily and, you know, substantially engaged in sex life can be the example of religious principles, like King Jayati. It's a little mind-boggling, because you think of someone who is so much into sex is a debauchee, that's how it comes, no? Is not a person who is someone who is absorbed in sense gratification, sensual pressure. But there was not a problem for these people, for these great personalities, because they never deviated from religious principle. King Dushmanta is described as, you know, the fact that he couldn't even wait for the sage Kambwa Muni to actually give his blessings, and, you know, he needed to unite with Shakuntala right on the spot, because, you know, one can think, well, can you wait? But no, you know, he wanted to fulfill that. But he's described as someone who is so fixed in religious principles that he never discharged semen without having the right result. So this is Vedic culture, and people were prepared for that. They were trained for that. They were trained, you know, they have the training of embracing jnana and vidya. Jnana and vairagya. Transcendental knowledge and renunciation. They get that training in the Gurukula. You know, we see when we hear the narrations of Lord Krishna in the ashram of Sandipani Muni, how he performed all kinds of austerities along with Sudama. And so they train like that. Now, we don't have that situation in Kali Yuga. We have no training. We have no preparation. At least many of us. I mean, still, there is for devotees who take birth in India, there's a little more advantage. It's not, you know, a huge advantage, but it's an advantage because it's a culture that is still, there's some residuals of Vedic culture. Not a lot, but there is. So, you know, still when they look back at some generations, you know, the grandfathers and the grandmothers, there is some more resemble to how things were done in, during Vedic times. However, to solve this issue of how one can actually create a very healthy environment at home that is full with intimacy and affection and emotional support for all the members of the family is quite challenging. Another thing is that the importance of creating a support system, basically a network or a social system with our society or our movement, an ISKCON movement. And that's what the devotees have been working hard on it. So, so how to deal with that is the question, at least, you know, now. The best use of a bad bargain, you know, like that, right? How we can deal, or what is the situation that we have to be prepared, and how can we deal with this thing? So, we know the philosophy. We hear from Srila Prabhupada, like for example here, divorce is not encouraged. In fact, Prabhupada, in certain parts of the Bhagavatam, his teachings, his writings, he condemns them very strongly. But it's a reality that we face. It's a reality that we face, and how we can become better and create that situation. How can we deal with the disabilities and the difficulties that we bring just out of condition into, you know, trying to create a Vedic society, you know, a Vedic marriage like that. How do we deal with that? It's not an easy thing. At least in my limited experience, it's not has been a very easy thing, you know. But one thing that helps has been a commitment to your spiritual master, of committing to actually the process of purification that you started by approaching a spiritual master, and you stick to it, and you know that, you know, you always hear this thing that no gain, what is it? No pain, no gain. Regardless how we square it or how we approach it, if we want to become purified, if we want to have a chance to actually move out of this world of dukkha, dukkhalayan ashashvatam, if we want a chance for that, then we have to be ready to accept some voluntarily pain. We have to go through that regardless. If you remain this, if you try this, if you try that, purification means pain. Because you have to actually almost have a major surgery to take, you know, it's like cancer. It's a painful procedure to take something that is unwanted, that is poisoned you, and that, you know, it doesn't allow for you to actually be. a healthy individual. So we have to accept in one sense that there will be discomfort, there will be pain, and it may last for quite a bit, depending on how thick our difficulties are. But in one sense, if we stick to it, then we're going to see that at one point some things start to become clear, that the purpose of the endeavor, the purpose of purification, the purpose of an ashram is actually purification, is to become free from our condition. And then it becomes something that gives hope. And then what we find, at least something that in my marriage, my wife is here, so, you know, it hasn't been easy, but we're committed. We have come to an understanding that we have to become better. We have to become free. And by Krishna's arrangement, Guru and Krishna's arrangement, when you stick to it, you can start to, it becomes almost like becomes very apparent what are the things, it becomes very graphically apparent what are the things that you have to work on yourself. You're forced, if you stick to it, you're forced to pay attention, because it becomes so glaringly, you know, in front of your face that you have no choice. You have no choice but to do it. And it's not easy, it's painful, it deals with the most inner, you know, condition that you may have. And at times, you know, you can understand, you may have thoughts of, I need to quit. You know, this is just too much to handle. But somehow or other, if one keeps going through, you can understand that, yes, actually, I can handle it. I can handle it. And the fact is that when it's under the blessings of Guru and Krishna, things that are arranged in one's life, one can understand that they're put there because the fact is that we can handle it. Krishna is very kind. And the purpose is just simply to help us become free. And that approach at once and one point helps, because now the friendship, the appreciation, the affection, and the intimacy can be built from the appreciation of having a partner, someone who is with you and who is sticking, you know, throughout. So you appreciate that. You start to appreciate the person from another perspective, not from a physical perspective, from a perspective of having a partner in self-realization. And that is a much more deeper source of affection, of actually a relationship. So anyway, a lot of things to say about this. I wish I had more time to actually think deeply about how to present this. I mean, we have some devotees who are grihasthas, and, you know, maybe any thoughts or comments or questions also
from everybody if you want to contribute to help me a little bit because I couldn't think much about Giridhari Prabhu.
Thank you. I have a few thoughts. One of my questions is about like avoiding the purification, also like in regards to like the Brahmacharya ashram, especially it seems like there's this tendency I see to avoid purification by staying secluding yourself, staying in your own little place in a Brahmacharya ashram. You can just seclude yourself and avoid any like deep or like commitments to other individuals. So I'm wondering if you can speak about the importance of that commitment to other devotees in the purification process and the difficulty and the reason why we shouldn't avoid committing ourselves to other devotees.
As
always, you know, when doing, at least given the service of come up with organize a Brahmacharya ashram, one of the things that I always thought was, you know, in one sense, because most of us have to go towards Grihastha, few can remain as Brahmacharis, but regardless, the principles of ashram are the same in all the different ashrams. That's what, you know, a realization. So it's a perfect preparation. At least I won't say a perfect right now, but it's the best preparation you can have for entering into Grihastha ashram. For the ones who are gonna do it like that, which are the majority. So if the goal is clear, it becomes a little bit simpler, you know, like that. Well, I remember mentioning to you guys, hold tight. Anyway, there will be a perfect time for these things. So it's just, you know, you go to university, it's 4 years. Why not 2 years? Why not 1 year? Why we have to go to 4 years? Well, it's 4 years. You know, that's what you need to actually get the training to your career. And then you get a job, and then you make money. And then you can start your life. So similarly, you know, at least some time for preparation. So, in the Brahmacharya ashram, you experience something like in the Grihastha ashram, which is relationship with others. In the Grihastha ashram, the problems that you face in the Brahmacharya ashram and in Grihastha ashram, you can multiply several folds because it's a much greater level of intimacy. And in a much greater level of intimacy, you are fully exposed. There's no things that you keep personal. In the Brahmacharya ashram, you can keep some things personal. You know, in the Grihastha ashram, everything is known. And so, how we relate with each other is with the point that you bring, that relationships are difficult because we're different. And we see things different, and we, you know, we have different needs. We may have some similarities in these areas, but, you know, at the end, when you really shuffle it around,
we have very different sets of things, you know, how we see, how we perceive, how we, you know, do things. And then negotiating between those things when you have, you're living in close quarters with someone else, you have to work it out. And that's when it becomes painful. That's when you say, oh my God, I can't take these guys. I need my space. So then what happened when you get married? Well, it's going to get more tough because men's are from Mars and women's are from Venus. You know, now it's two different planets, you know. And you have to, you have to have some skills. You have to develop some, and that purification, if you do it earlier, is going to help a lot when you go into married life. So, some sort of a creating a better way of educating our devotees. So, you know, there's a clear purpose. When you come out of high school and you go into university, there's a very clear purpose of what you do. So you happily take, you know, whatever they give you. I mean, if the medical career, instead of 4 years, is 8 years, be it. You take it. Because you have a clear purpose. So, to prepare you. So, if we have a way of communicating, you know, the clear purposes, so you know that you're preparing yourself for something, then, you know, you can take some of the painful things. You can take the austerities of things. You know, athletes, for example, if they want to be in the Olympics, they take the whole, I mean, it's very austere life what they live, but they go through. So I think it's a matter of having, from the student and from the institution, a very set of clear sense of purpose. What is the outcome of this education that you receive in the ashram? You know, and regardless, if you decide to be a brahmachari for life, the same principle will apply, because, you know, the brahmachari, the ashram is the same. You still have to work out relationships, you know, like that. Is that an answer? You have a little, some comment?
I guess, I mean, I wasn't really asking about, like, just the ashram, so like how, like, the brahmachari ashram prepares you for the grihastha ashram. It's more so just specifically speaking about relationships, like whatever ashram, but like the importance of that, like devotee relationships in the purification process. And then on that, like, say it the other way, like how it like stops the purification if you close yourself off from other devotees.
Right.
Like,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. We're not impersonalists, you know, we're personalists. In fact, the whole description of the life of a devotee or devotional service is about rasa. You know, remember when in the beginning of the Bhagavatam is the devotees are described as those who relish the rasas. Rasa means, you know, all these different moods in relationships. So in reality, it's all about relationships. It's what we do in the spiritual world. We relate with Krishna, we relate with the devotees, you know, like that. The contrary to that, what brings us to the material world is we is impersonalism. We could be very comfortable with impersonalism because you don't have to deal with, you know, all these complications. So we have to pay attention to that if we want to have a chance Because otherwise, you have to break through that one to be able to go back home, back to Godhead. There's no choice also. It's just part of who we are. It's all about relationships. The relationship with the spiritual master prepares a relationship with Krishna. Like I don't hear for Krishna, you know. I mean, you feel affection for the deities, but it's still, you know, there's too much blocks, you know, like that. I mean, when that blocks are, like, you hear about Srila Jiva Goswami dressing, you know, Shishi Radha Damodar, and Damodar, you know, playing the flute and him trying to control him, you know, be quiet, you know, like, be steady so I can dress. I mean, this these things happening, you know, like that. Madam Mohan telling Sanatana Goswami, can I have some salt in my chapati, you know, like that. So, we are a spiritual master also, not only, so this is all about cultivating relationship with your, you know, with the other devotees. And I think the only principle that's why the whole thing about Trinarapi Sunichena is, these are all those four factors have to do with how to relate. Because if you're in your room, you don't talk to anyone, you keep yourself, what do you need to be humble for? And tolerant. If you minimize your contact with people, you don't have the problem of, you don't have to be tolerant with anyone, because you don't have to tolerate, you know, you avoid them. And what to speak of respect and like that, and covering your false ego. It's all about relationship. Everything is about relationship. Therefore, you know, the nectar of devotion is bhakti rasa amrita. Rasa is the nectar of devotion. Is about rasa, which is relationships. So, what do you think?
Yeah, I just think so. Such an essential thing to understand, what I'm perceiving is that, like, through the relationships, through acting in the relationships, all of our impersonalism, all of our selfishness, all of our material contamination is exposed, and then when you continue a relationship with a devotee, even though you go through difficulties, but you learn, you develop the good qualities through those relationships that you stick it out with. You hurt people if you're close with people, and you make mistakes, then that you feel that you've hurt other person, then you want to improve,
you become conscious of others too.
Yeah,
that's Krishna consciousness.
Otherwise, it's just before that you're just always absorbed in this self-centered illusion dream of like your own thing, and then you don't, it's like you hardly ever, I've heard personally, I hardly ever thought of what other people were actually perceiving, or like what they're experiencing, or like just that they have their own whole existence outside of my little life. It seems like the more we can invest in that, in relationships with devotees, the more we'll become purified and become Krishna conscious. Because the opposite is just sometimes you get, there's this idea that you just drop relationships and just study the books and just chant. It's
and it's quite something. That is such ingrained, this impersonalism and this sort of self-centered thing. I mean, ultimately, you know, this is helping us to become Krishna conscious, and also, you know, become not being impersonal toward Krishna. That's why we can chant, at least many of us can chant without paying attention to Krishna. So it's a symptom of our impersonalism. So, and it becomes also, like say as a grihastha, or you know, you have to even face a much deeper thing, because sometimes you're personal with this one, with so many things, and then you neglect, you know, those who are the most intimate with you, your, you know, spouse and your children. You know, just as if you go deeper, how we neglect Krishna, who is the closest into our heart. Purification is like, oh, you know, it's like too much. But boy, you know, I mean, it's so embarrassing, it's so sad, it's so tragic, the situation that we have right now to be in this material world. So, get a chance. We have a chance now to actually become better, become, you know, free from this thing. And we have to take it. It's not going to be, you know, like a piece of, you know, like piece of cake. It's going to take some voluntary taking it. And then you have a chance to be happy. Otherwise, life after life, butva butva praliyate, over and over and over. Chirampa Swami's ferris wheel. Any other comment or question? Someone else?
Hare Krishna, thank you for explanation. In the Prabhupada, Prabhupada mentions the son delivers the father and mother follows by it. But looking at the current situation as a spiritual master delivering everyone, you know, including the father, mother and the child, how do you reconcile both of the statements to understand properly?
That the spiritual master is the deliverer. Well, what it says here that you get delivered from Yamaraj, not from the material world. Yeah. But, he said at the end, he said at the end that if the son is a Vaishnava, he can be, what is it, let's see, consequent. If they have a child whom they raise to be a Vaishnava, they can both, he can save both the father and the mother from the custody of Yamaraj. So it's about Yamaraj, you know, so you don't have to go to a hellish situation. Now, if you have a spiritual master, you know, the spiritual master can deliver you from the material world. I don't know. What do you think? How do you understand it?
I think I misunderstood that. Did you clarify it? Thank you.
Yeah. The question is, if you have a Vaishnava, I mean, you hear also now that when I read this, if you have a Vaishnava who have achieved Krishna Prema, then that Vaishnava can free you, you know, not only your immediate parents, but, you know, 10 generations back, 10 generations in front from this material world. And, but that's the, you know, you have to be a liberated soul. But, you know, we are Vaishnavas. I'm not a liberated soul, but, you know, because we're doing devotional service. I was thought of this too. I mean, I heard that before too, that our parents receive 1/6 of the credit of the things that we do either bad or good. So when we do devotional service, so if I do 6 hours of devotional service, it equates that my father and my mother are sitting in their home, you know, watching TV, are getting the, you know, the result of 1 hour of devotional service, right? If we think like that. So they're doing devotional service without doing anything, you know, because they simply beget a son or their daughter is a Vaishnava who is doing devotional service. So that means that in their next life, they're going to continue all that accumulated thing of the years that you accumulate of doing devotional service, that is not destroyed by death. It goes into your eternal devotional account. So you start your next life to continue devotional life as a devotee. So they're already devotees. They're doing devotional service. So, you know, they don't even they may eat meat. My father eats meat, but he's getting the benefit of what I'm doing.
Thank you.
One more question? Well, 2 more questions, okay. Taraknath.
Thank you so much, Bo. Prabhupada, I have one doubt. You know, I just want to be clear about that. According to this verse, if a person need a wife for the child, for the putra, right? And then there another verse in Chanakya Pandit says, putra arte kriyate bhayat, putra pinda prayojanam. The putra we need for the pindadan. It's called pindadan, one sanskars. But according to Gita, Lord says, Daivi Vasha Guramai Mamu Maya Durataya. So he will deliver us, Lord says, if we, you know, worship him, if we surrender unto him. Another verse he says, you know, Sarma Dharman Parityaja. So we got the order of Krishna. So is there a necessity to get a son?
No.
Is there any necessity to get a son? Because we are following the rules and regulations of Prabhupada and order of Krishna. So according to that verse, Sarva Dharman Parityaja and then Daivi Vasha Gunamai, so I'm just feeling doubt.
Yeah, no, ultimately, the, you know, there's no necessity, because the necessity is that you surrender to Guru and Krishna. It is recommended. Actually, it's the purpose of marriage in general, to beget children. And it's a natural arrangement. For a woman to have a child, it brings all the natural, you know, it becomes, it's complete. In the situation of myself and my wife, circumstantially we didn't have children. But my Guru Maharaj once says, you know, then, well, you got, by Krishna's arrangement, situations in which you have to look after children, and you know that whole propensity, the parental propensity, was, you know, placed into that. So we spent many years working with the children in New Jersey, and there is that natural parental affection that was created there in both ways, with the children now they're grown, and ourselves. So somehow their Guru and Krishna make that arrangement. But in general, it's a necessity. It's the proper purpose of Grihastha Ashram. You know, to beget good children, Vaishnava. And, you know, it makes home life, family life. Like that. It's 5 minutes past 8:30. Mataji, yeah. Good.
Okay. Hare Krishna Prabhuji, thank you so much for this class, especially about how you were saying the essence of everything is relationships. So my question is, in your vast experience counseling and taking care of the spiritual lives of many of the people that you know, what is the biggest hindrance in establishing nice, loving relationships with Krishna in the center? A couple of, you know, issues that you've noticed and which we need to address, because without that it's not going to move forward. Mm-hmm. Understanding, I love the way you said that rasa is all about relationships. I mean, that is the first time I'm hearing that. That is very sweet. Thank you so much for that.
Mm-hmm. The immediate thing that comes to mind is selfishness. And sometimes that selfishness doesn't allow, just like Giridhar was saying, not seeing others, we're seeing others more or less in relationship to your world, like that, but not being able to see others, you know, from a different perspective, from their perspective, like that. So I think particularly I find that has been one of the more glaring obstacles, at least in my experience, that we tend to relate from our perspective, and to be able to understand someone else's very different perspective sometimes is very challenging. And it requires really a very well-established sense of humility, tolerance, respect, and the sense of, you know, the false ego being a little tame, to be open. So I think I would say that, in my opinion. Any Krishna Archana, you want to add to that or say something about that in your experience?
So the question was, what inhibits relationships? Well, I think the point that was brought up is the most significant one. It's sort of development in Krishna consciousness that initially everything is, it's like when a child is very small, like 2 years, 3 years, the entire world is, you know, a bubble around themselves. They're not even getting a sense of you, it's I. So it's a similar sort of thing. So many years in Krishna consciousness, one is so caught up in one's own, I guess, emotions, mental state. So one's outlook is in relation to one's own reality, which was what was brought up. So it takes that purification allows for one to be able to see the other person. And I mean, because of the work that I'm always doing, teaching children, even the methodology for teaching philosophy, Western philosophy, talks about seeing the other. So it, actually one needs to be trained and go through purification to be able to actually see another person, and to actually understand is even going further. So it's an unusual concept, because I think most persons think that they actually are relating with another person, but in actual fact, purification is the only thing that allows one to see the other person and truly embrace the world of the other person and genuinely want to wish well to the other person in their aspirations and the fulfillment of their Krishna conscious desires. So it's not a simple thing to even talk about relationship. It's truly a lot of purification has to go through to truly see another person even. So that's a thought.
Yeah, thanks. Karunanidhi Prabhu, you wanna? Yeah, keep it short so we can finish it.
I was thinking that regarding that his question, Gridhar question, that Prabhupada used to say that brahmachari, brahmachari vasandanta, that means gurukula vasandanta, that means like if any devotee is staying in brahmachari ashram, so it is actually he is staying like a gurukul type, you know, in Prabhupada's gurukul, you can say. So first principle is that they have to control their senses. That is the first and foremost duty of any brahmachari. They have to control their senses. And in relation to this fact, I found there is a very nice verse in Canto 11, in chapter 3. There is paraspara kathanu kathanu, like pavanu hari something. That means that verse is telling they have to discuss among themselves, and brahmacharis, they should together they chant, together discuss about glories of the Lord. Now this way is the most, this is the best process by which they can control their senses and they cannot fall down. So this verse is telling 11:332, I think. Okay, so and this is that. And regarding, I had a question, and this he asked also the same question, that how the son can deliver his father from the custody of Yamaraj. That I was thinking to ask him. So what is the, but I think it is a best, it is a different matter. Like according to you asked also one question, that what is the need of son, like, you know, that if we are again in the process of Krishna consciousness. Yeah, really the main thing is that this is telling about karmakanda. Karmakanda, it is a part of Veda. Right. So, but when a devotee is fully surrendered to Krishna and his guru, then he has no more debt to anybody, according to Bhagavad Gita. There is, you have so many debt for so many things, you know, but that you are no more debt is there. So like, so that is why you told very nice thing in that section in Bhagavad Gita, it is stated 10 generations before ancestors, 10 generation generators, all will be delivered if a son becomes a devotee of Krishna. So this is also, these are the things I was going to say. And still, if you can add anything regarding the how that a father is get delivered by son from Yamaraj. That's what, from the custody of Yamaraj, Prabhupada said.
Jai. Thank you. Said. Well, I think it was said, and you explained it also, is part of karmakanda, you know. Part of karmakanda is part of the Vedic culture. So you do the Shraddha ceremony, the Pinda ceremony, and those things. Those are different sacrifices that are prescribed in Vedic culture. So if you are following the yoga ladder, the karmakanda, then, you know, you make sure that, you know, your child makes sure that, you know, you're not have to go to hell, basically. It delivers you from that situation. So, but for devotees, it's a different arrangement. So just as you said. So it was discussed, so I think we stop here. Garantara Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jaya. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jaya.